start, why did you get involved in working for the Bradley Manning Support Network?
It became clear that Bradley Manning was going to be tried in this region at Fort Meade, which is just outside of Baltimore, and that there was actually a need to have supporters at the hearings. I felt compelled to lend my support. Since I'm partially employed, it was easier for me to do during the day than for many people. And given the climate of intimidation in the United States, people's fear of surveillance and fear of speaking up, especially on war issues, I thought that it would be imperative for those of us who understood clearly the need to stand up for people like Bradley Manning, that it was incumbent upon me to join others in being present for the trial. So I have tried to go out to the vigils that precede each trial session and also to be present in the courtroom when I can.
And this is quite an effort because you don't have a car, do you? And it's only accessible by car.
It's been a bit of an effort, and I wasn't always able to get a ride, but the Bradley Manning Support Network has done a phenomenal job in trying to make sure that anyone who goes out there does have a ride, and if you have to go by the local commuter rail to the nearby station, they'll pick you up there. But it was a little bit of a while before I managed to figure that out.
What's the significance of the Bradley Manning trial?
I think that Bradley Manning has, in the revelations that came about through the material he provided to WikiLeaks, I think that he has saved many, 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 many lives. The revelations about their government's various nefarious doings led pretty much directly to the Arab Spring and to a resurgence in movements around the world. It's not so much that activists on the ground in different countries internationally are not aware of some of the ways in which their governments collude with the United States, that there's kind of international collusion among corporate structures in repressing people, undertaking renditions and cooperating on war policies. But when you have precise revelations that pinpoint times and dates and the kinds of things that he was able to reveal, it paints an indisputable picture that can be used to mobilize more and more people and to intensify their sense of the need to oppose what their governments are doing and what the U.S. is doing. I think that also there's been increasing crackdown under the Obama administration on whistleblowers, which is quite tragic since many people voted for Obama in the belief that he would be marginally more progressive than earlier presidents. But in fact, his track record with regard to cracking down on dissenting voices has been one of the worst in U.S. political history. So I think we have to fight back against that. And Manning was in such a vulnerable position, I think that your heart just went out to him. I mean, here was someone who was not from the supposed radical hotbeds of the East Coast or the West Coast of the United States, but he came from Oklahoma. He was the, you know, innocent from the heartland, so to speak. And he goes into the military for the best of reasons and becomes completely horrified at what the government is doing in his name. And he has the guts and the smarts to do the only moral thing he can do, which is to expose that in the hopes that it will put an end to these grotesque war atrocities. I think you'd have to have ice in your veins not to want to stand up for someone like this. And given the fact that I do have a long history of political work, and I'm aware that we still in this country have political prisoners who were Black Panthers, whose big crime was organizing breakfast programs, they've been rotting in jail for decades. We have one locally, Marshall Eddie Conroy from Baltimore, who was a phenomenal community organizer. There's just scores of them in the United States, and it's a secret. And Bradley Manning, because of the visibility that his case has attracted, deserves support for that reason, because we can use it not only to shed a light on the issues of what U.S. war policies are, but also on the whole issue of political prisoners in the United States and the quashing of dissent. One of the things that is, in a strange way, is heartening, is that the United States government has felt compelled to come down so harshly on Manning and on Snowden, and to try to make a public spectacle of the atrocious ways in which the government is trying to silence them and marginalize them and possibly even take Bradley Manning's life, either through a life sentence or the death sentence. Usually what is called a democracy under capitalist conditions prefers basically the corporate structure's rule because people have the belief that they actually control things through the vote and that they have a right to dissent. And what those of us who have been active for a long time know is that if our reforms cut too deeply into the profit margins of these corporations, they will come down very, very hard on us. But they still prefer in public to look as though that they're doing things democratically. When they have to reveal their true face, which is the face of repression in the name of making profits, it's a sign of weakness on their part. And I believe that what they know in the case of Manning and Snowden, because they are representative of the general population in terms of their background, neither of them came from activist families. Therefore, we can see that they could be simply the tip of the iceberg. I mean, there are millions of people who have access to all of this data that the United States is collecting on people and all of the other kinds of information that's out there. And so if you have two people that come forward, there have to be 10,000 other people that are considering it. And so the weakness of the United States is revealed in that it feels compelled to show its naked and cruel power in these two cases in order to forestall others coming forward. So as harsh as it may be to witness what's going on, and as frightening and as intimidating as it may be for many people, if you understand how that system works, you understand that actually the U.S. in long term is in a position of weakness, just as it's in a position of weakness when it's resorting to the use of naked military power around the world instead of being a genuine democracy representing the interests of the common person.
What's been the role of the media in the Bradley Manning trial?
It's been atrocious. The judge is probably going to render her verdict within 10 days. I think they said that there was a pool of 19 reporters or something out at the fort. The U.S. does not want people to hear about this case. And there are people, unfortunately, still large sectors of the U.S. public that don't know who Bradley Manning is, including people who have a fair amount of formal education or college graduates. You speak of Bradley Manning and they go, who? So they tend to bury the news. It's certainly not being highlighted. It's not completely silenced, but it hasn't received anything like the attention it should. And when it has received attention, I mean, he has been vilified as a traitor, as having deliberately given information to the enemy, of aiding and abetting the enemy, which are treasonous offenses that could incur the death penalty. These are all ridiculous charges. And curiously enough, in his case, the newspapers which reprinted material from WikiLeaks have not been charged. The corporate press, the New York Times, they haven't been charged with any of these treasonous offenses. Why not?
Possibly you remember the absolute drama of our childhood star, Ethel and Julius Rosenberg, who were charged under the same Espionage Act of 1917 with aiding and abetting the enemy, and who were executed in 1953. Do you see any parallels between that case and this one in 2013, 60 years later?
Yes, there are definite parallels. When the Rosenbergs were executed, it was at the time of the Korean War, which was in many ways a war that the United States should never have been involved in. It was allegedly to stop communist expansionism, but in reality, the Korean Peninsula had had its own socialist revolution and had been defeated by the Japanese and the U.S. The U.S., after World War II, appointed people who had collaborated with the Japanese, Koreans from the corporate class, to oversee events. But it was by no means just Chinese expansionism into Korea. It was an indigenous revolution, and it was a time of rising revolution. The United States feared greatly the influence of communists. They had been successful in forming many of the most prominent unions in the United States, the Teamsters Union, the steelworkers, the auto manufacturers. And there was no reason that one could believe that their influence would not continue to grow, since they were speaking out on behalf of working people. Consequently, it was very, very important to crack down on them and their influence. And you had in the United States the McCarthy period, where various Hollywood producers and artistic leaders were repressed. And there was just a routing of communist influence. And the Rosenbergs were just, in some ways, the most visible victims of that process. And just to give you some example of how contemptible that prosecution was, there was never any real evidence that Ethel Rosenberg knew anything about the exact transactions that her husband was alleged to have engaged in. It was a time of rising revolution around the world, too. There were successful rebellions going on in Asia and in Africa. So that was another reason, besides what was happening in the United States, for them to be repressed. Right now, you have a juncture in the United States and in the world. I can't say that you've got rising revolution, but the United States is losing its grip in terms of being the major superpower. For a long time, it's been a kind of a competitive stalemate with Germany and Japan. And in the past, when the major, if you will, imperialist powers or corporate structures reached a logjam, they had overproduced, the markets were saturated, the only way that they could gain competitive advantage against each other was by going to war. Well, when all of the major industrialized countries that went to war in World War I and World War II in order to kind of redivide the pot, because there were no territories left for them to expand into on a colonial basis, those major industrialized powers have not been able to go to war with each other because of the nuclear weapon dimension. And so what they have chosen to do instead, or been forced to do, is to exact their profit margins from basically lowering working class standard of living through speeding up workers, laying them off, taking back benefit packages that had been won through union struggles, and so on and so forth. And so there is starting to be a lot of resistance to that. There hasn't been a big overall movement, but there's starting to be a lot of activity. And as we can see, Europe has been pretty much in crisis. If one of these countries defaults, apparently it's just going to bring down the whole house of cards. And the public here in the United States is very disenchanted. I mean, there have been tremendous revelations for several years now about the horrible treachery, or actually it was their modus operandi, but to the public it would have appeared, the naive public, it would have appeared as a fresh atrocity, and that is the manipulations of the financial markets. So there's a lot of reasons for the average U.S. citizen to feel extremely frightened, and they can't trust their bankers. The cities are gentrifying, rents are escalating, there's a housing crisis, unemployment is rising. They're not good for the middle class in general, but for populations that are oppressed by race and class in terms of having even less education, the conditions are totally atrocious. And yet we in the United States, as the most advanced industrialized country in the world, supposedly are something like 26th in the world in terms of health care for our population. We can't even get universal health care. So people are aware, things are stirring. As one revolutionary once put it, the heat may be under the pot of water and you may not see it boiling for a long time, but that heat is there. And the powers that be sometimes study these things and understand these dynamics a lot better than movement activists do, unfortunately. But the U.S. is basically, as I said, for many reasons, they're in a weaker position than they were several decades ago, certainly after World War II. So the harsher repression we're seeing here, which not only includes what's happening to Manning, but just the general treatment even of protesters. There's been real police brutality against the average protesters in the Occupy movements. Excessive violence, it's escalated. And all of this is a sign of a system that's badly frightened. The one other thing is kind of a watchword for us is to bear in mind the things that Nelson Mandela said when he came out of prison in 1989. He did an interview on Nightline with Ted Koppel, and he made this point which I have never forgotten and I never will forget, and I think we have to really hold it dear to us as activists. And he said, those will prevail not who land the most blows, but who are able to sustain the most blows. Well, sometimes it appears that we're losing, but if you can just stand your ground and keep putting one foot in front of the other and not lose your will, we need to think strategically in terms of building forces which can basically supplant the kind of system we have now. The idea of just building coalitions or organizations to put pressure on the governments we have now is just not going to be sufficient. The capitalist economy is just irrational by nature. Revolutionaries do not repudiate reforms. those are the building blocks of our movement. And what we recognize is that we have a need to defend those reforms by setting in place structures that will enhance our activity so that those reforms can be perpetuated and extended. We can never trust that a reform we have won under capitalist conditions will just remain in place. And so we have to fight not because we want to, but to defend our gains. Anything you ever hear about revolutionary violence, it is in defense of the gains that we have made, because we recognize through history that they will always resort to outright violence to protect their profit margins if they have to.